The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of FMR.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I'm sure you know by now that the big musical here at Artscape for Christmas and New Year is Cats, Andrew Lloyd Webber's extraordinary musical that is so hugely popular. It's being put on by Peter Turin Productions in collaboration with GEWB Entertainment and Cape Town Opera. And I, for one, am looking forward to seeing it. It's on a big stage, it's got stunning costumes, and in the studio with me today is the musical director, Louis Zunama. Louis, welcome. Welcome indeed.
Thank you so much, Rodney.
When you were asked to do Cats, were you excited? Because we're going to talk about your life and the endless shows you've done for Peter Turin, including all the touring you've done, a lot of the very big numbers you've done, and then you get a phone call to say, how about Cats?
I was very excited. I do love working on the musical, I have to say. And I also haven't done a show in Cape Town over Christmas for ages. Oh. I think the last time I did something here in the Opera House was when we did Matilda, the musical, which was, I think, 2018 or something.
It was a long time ago.
Yes.
Although you then ended up touring with it for years and years and years.
Yes, absolutely. And then subsequently, I've done quite a bit of work for GWB, mainly in the East, in China and Singapore and places like that. So it's absolutely stunning to be here.
Have you done it before, Cats?
Yes, this is my fourth production of it. The first one I did was here in 2008 or 9, I believe. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the first one that Peter had done. It was the second one that he did. And then I did one in Korea in 2017, where I was the musical director as well. And I stayed with that production for about 4 months in Seoul, which was just fabulous. Although it was summer there, so that wasn't fabulous because it's unbearably hot.
I'm sure it must have been. Goodness me.
Then the third production, I was associate or assistant musical supervisor. So I didn't perform the show. I went and did the rehearsal. That was also in Seoul. Yeah. Did the rehearsal period. So this will be my fourth one.
Wow. And this is a ridiculous question, but I just feel like asking it to you. Do you like it? Do you like the music of Cats?
You see, I've never actually been on the audience side of it. I've always only worked on it.
Yes.
Because even with that very, very first one that Peter did, which was, I think, around about 1999 or 2000, I was living in the UK. I had many friends who worked on it and who subsequently, people I didn't know then, who became fantastic colleagues. People like Duane Alexander and Anton Leighton, you know, who owned Anton. Paul Warwick Griffin, the G of GWB, and the W of GWB, Gareth, Hewitt Williams, they were still performers as well. So they performed in that production. But I didn't know them then. I didn't see it because I wasn't in the country. Mm-hmm. But what I do love is working on it because it really feels like you work again, number one, on one of those absolutely wonderful gems of musical theater, one of the sort of holy grails of musical theater.
Very true,
And also because there's such a wonderful work ethic behind it, Rodney. And people really work hard on that stage. Mm-hmm. And it's really wonderful to be part of that process.
It does require hard work physically, doesn't it? It's tremendously athletic, this particular
absolutely athletic
this particular musical.
And there's no help for them vocally. Everybody sings and dances on that stage. They do it all, mm-hmm. whether they are panting and wanting to pass out from fatigue, they have to deliver. It's really lovely that it really feels it's proper, proper old school musical theater in that sense where people really, really work very hard.
I've always thought that Cats is slightly different stylistically from, say, Phantom or Jesus Christ Superstar or even Evita.
Yeah.
It's got its own sort of feel, hasn't it, Cats? I can't quite put my finger on why it's different. And I don't mean that in a negative way, by the way. I mean it in a very positive way.
Mm. I think from a sound picture point of view, there is, I suppose, in the design still something delightfully 1980s about it, you know.
Yes.
But
yes.
I think with so many of the other things, like with Evita, for instance, you know, it has a very classical feel to it and with obviously elements of Latin American music in it, where with something like Cats, you find more of, he touched on different genres of music. You have a bit of rock music, a bit of glam rock in there. You have some jazz, some swing, music that has the flavor of slightly sort of more Edwardian England. So I think it has that sort. It's not, I don't know if one can call it pastiche, I suppose, but it has elements of different musical styles. And then, of course, because there's such a big dance element in it, I think there's a big balletic element to the music as well, mm-hmm. especially in that wonderful ball of Act One.
Oh, yes. Really,
and you know, with interestingly, last night I listened to an interview, a similar interview with Gillian Lynn that was done in 1981 on Desert Island Discs.
Oh, yes.
And then listening to that as well, to see how her background is so firmly in ballet, how it started there. And she, in fact, says that when she used to work with choreographers subsequently, how she would often go back to, if they were, with composers, if they were stuck together in ideas, she would often go back to the music of Prokofiev to find inspiration again. Look, I'm not saying there's any much, you know, in terms of Prokofiev necessarily in Cats, but you certainly get a sense that there's a fantastic, there is a balletic element to it as well, which is really mm-hmm. lovely.
And rhythmically, I suppose, maybe that's the connection she made with Prokofiev, if you think of Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
Very complicated rhythms.
Complicated
actually.
Rhythms, interesting time signatures.
That's right,
you know,
that's
it's
right.
not. It's really interesting. You know, when you've done it a few times, you take it for granted that you see a time signature like 10:08 in a bar.
Yeah,
that it seems. But then all of a sudden you have to go make sense of that again if you're teaching it to people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's anyway one of the flavors of Andrew Lloyd Webber's musicals, that you still, like, the time signatures are always interesting.
Yes, indeed. Right back to Joseph and Jesus Christ Superstar.
Absolutely.
He has things in 5/4, you know, which you don't expect really from
absolutely.
A Broadway musical or if a West End musical.
Yes, if you think of something like Phantom, I mean, I believe I might be wrong now, but as far as I remember, the beginning of the manager scenes has 15:16 as a time signature. So it's literally
wow.
one semiquaver short of a 4/4 bar.
Yes.
So it feels sort of slightly, like it's limping
it's
slightly.
A little bit of a limp. Yeah, good heavens. I'm most intrigued to carry on talking about the music, but let's, because we do, as you know, Louis, on this program, always ask the guests to choose his music. So I'm particularly intrigued by what you might have chosen. And so what's our first piece?
We're going back a few centuries from Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Nothing wrong with that.
But I chose a piece of organ music that I have loved since my childhood. Organ was my second instrument at high school, and I was organist for a while during my student days to make money. And this piece is the Toccata from the Toccata, Adagio and Fugue in C major by Bach. BWV 564, for anybody who's interested in that. But it's such a delightful piece of music. It is so flamboyant, young, youthful, concerto-like. Bach wrote it in probably between 1710 and 1717 when he was in Weimar, so he was still a young man. But what I love about the story is that he, in 1705, he walked all the way from Arnstadt, of course, to Lübeck
right.
to go listen to Buxtehude and study with him. I always like to think that he went there to go eat marzipan in Lübeck and go study with Buxtehude. But it's an interesting era in music because 1710 was also the year that St. Paul's Cathedral was finished in London.
Okay.
Well 1717, done. Which is that era, was when Watteau painted that beautiful in the embarkation for Cithare. So weirdly already entering the world of the Rococo, even though Bach was so baroque.
Baroque, yes.
But
yes,
it's just
yes.
delightful. Peter Herford is the organist.
Thank you.
Well, there's some Bach for you. A toccata by Johann Sebastian Bach, played by Peter Herford, the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Louis Zernheimer. But was I right, and I'm not showing off, Louis, was there a pedal solo there?
Yes, it's quite a lengthy pedal solo near the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think that was the reason why as a child I was so obsessed with it. You know, when you're learning an instrument and the idea of people playing with their feet seems so outlandish, but there it is, it's incredibly virtuosic. I think it's one of the most famous pedal solos in the whole organ literature. Oh, fabulous.
I'll have to listen to it again and take note. Louis, we're talking about Cats, the forthcoming Peter Turin production of Cats here at Artscape. And at the moment, as you're the musical director, we're talking about the music. Are you in a pit with musicians, or are you on stage, or how does it work with Cats?
We are actually backstage. And the reason for that has to do with the design of the set. Because I don't know if people can remember, but the set has a sort of a wastelandy rubbish heap.
Yes, it does indeed.
Sort of a feeling to it. Yeah. And so the pit can't be used. I can't remember what the set was in the original production. I think you mentioned that you had seen the original one in London.
I had, but I can't remember where the orchestra was. Not at all.
So we are backstage. We're an eight-piece band. Mm-hmm. Three keyboards, guitar, bass, drums, and then incredibly hard working woodwind players. We were each of them playing three instruments, so they have their work cut out for them. But yes, it's actually really, I have to say, I quite sometimes enjoy sitting backstage on productions. On Matilda, in some of the Chinese venues, we had the same thing, which means that there's this delightful moments where cast members just peek into the band room or the band tent, as we sometimes call it, just to come say hello. I love that, because then you sort of feel really a part of that production backstage as well.
So the audience doesn't see you at all?
No. I know in the last time we did in Korea, there was a big screen that the subtitles were on for the Korean production. At the end, the band took a bow, bowing into the camera that they have on us. Because, of course, like, I'm on camera at that moment throughout the show, so the company can see upbeats.
I was just going to say that. How do they see you conducting?
So they have TV screens, usually on the gallery, on the circle.
On the proscenium arch.
And I think in Cats, if they still have them, tiny screens hidden in the set so that people can be turned upstage or facing into the wings, etc., and still see a conductor monitor somewhere.
Do you use what they call, I think, click tracks?
No click tracks for this one, because everything is completely live, so there's nothing that has to be supplementing basically the music. So we will in the pit have vocal fold back. So on a basic level, speakers with the live vocals coming through. But you know, nowadays the sound equipment is so phenomenal. You hear absolutely everything.
You hear
people breathing and everything. So it really becomes, it's really so immediate, your experience of the vocals, that it really makes life very easy. You could probably sit in another city and have a similar experience.
It's a thought, isn't it? Yes. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Never, please.
But now, the musicians don't see you except on the screen, and you don't see the singers. But do you see the actors?
Yes. So I have a nice, huge TV screen in the band room as well. And so wonderful quality, because we take a lot of visual cues. You know, there's a lot of things that I have in my score written. You know, I draw myself two big glasses in my score to know when I have to look for visual cues, because you do take a lot of stuff. And especially for the dance stuff, you are very aware of what's happening on stage in terms of tempo and stuff and going with them.
You know, sometimes people have said the sound is too loud. Very often I've not agreed, because it's part of the impact, isn't it? But there is a time when it does get too loud. And recently when I saw Joseph, the Peter Turin production of Joseph, the blend of the sound was excellent. And from what I remember here at Artscape, when Peter's doing a production here, they get the sound just right.
They do.
Really an impressive sound.
Yeah. And I think they're so particular. I think Andrew Lloyd Webber keeps a very firm control, but in the best way possible, on what that sound design will sound like, to make sure that the right associates come out, people who have had a history with the show. Because it's a complicated sound design, it certainly is. It's in surround sound, and I suppose that's why it sounds big as well. I think with Cats, generally, because it's not a hard rock show, it's a big sound as opposed to a loud sound, because I can also be very critical of very over loud sounds.
That is very good what you just said. Yeah. It's a big show.
Yes.
A big sound, but not a loud sound.
Absolutely. And I love that. And I have to say, the people that I've worked with on Cats before are phenomenal. They're phenomenal sound engineers. And the design is really quite lovely. I think they really have perfected it. They have their work cut out for them as well, with all those people on stage, everybody with a live microphone.
And there are quite a few on there on stage.
There are.
I won't ask you how many are in the cast, because it looks bewilderingly large.
It looks to me like hundreds.
Yes. And many of them, most of them are very young.
Yes.
For example, the chap... Dylan, who came from Joseph, playing the lead, he's in this as well.
Oh, recent graduate.
They're young people, young and energetic.
Yes, and thank goodness they are, because their bodies go through so much and they fit. And I mean, it's just crazy to see what they go through. They physically, it is quite unbelievable athletically what they do. So I think it's the perfect young person's musical.
Do you play an instrument with the soundtrack, or are you just conducting?
Just conduct. Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting, with so many musicals nowadays have piano conducting jobs. I think it's, you know, it's an interesting way to keep control of things as well. Matilda, I almost can't imagine now doing as a purely conducting job. It is a piano conducting job, and you do a lot from, interestingly, as a conductor on a show like that, you're often not keyboard one, you're keyboard two. So keyboard one is always busier. Yeah. But on Cats, and in fact, apart from School of Rock that I worked on a little bit last year in China, which is also obviously an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, that's a piano conducting job. But with most of the ones that I've done, whether it's Phantom, Evita, Sunset Boulevard I just did recently in China, and Cats, they're all purely conducting jobs. Mm-hmm. Even though the band of Cats is small, I think there's too much to be aware of on stage to be looking down at on a piano basically. Yes.
Just a little bit more background to this. We know that Cats, and as we do this interview, which is a few weeks before the opening, the cast is here. They've been rehearsing for, what you said, 3 weeks now.
Yeah, this is week
when do
three.
You come in as musical director?
From day one.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Right from the beginning.
From day one. Because we try to teach some of the music first before they stage it. So it really helps to have a little bit of a head start with the music. So we definitely start teaching music from day one. And in that first week especially, there's quite a few. Every day there's a dance, a music call, for the ensemble. And then breakaway rooms will do work on the solo moments in the show. But yeah, we're there from the very beginning. And then they start putting it on the floor. And then you work very, very closely with the choreographer, building things up from scratch, basically, in terms of tempo, etc. So it's a very collaborative experience.
Mm-hmm. And it must be, as you say, hard work. People in this cast, is there anyone who's done it before? Or are they all newcomers?
All newcomers.
Really? So they're all doing
There's one person who had done it before on a ship contract, because there is a version of Cats that they do on the ship. It's slightly shortened. I don't know how people do it on ships. I can't imagine being on a moving platform, but on sound, I suppose one doesn't feel it really. But so she's done it before, but everybody else is new, which actually is also quite delightful. To see how people develop, how they can't believe how fit they become in something. You know, at the beginning, people can't believe that they will ever get through a certain number without panting and being able to sing a note. And then 3 weeks later, they've broken certain fitness barriers. It's quite unbelievable.
I heard, I think it was Dylan from Joseph, who said, when they go to Johannesburg, when there's not so much oxygen because of the altitude, they have to work a lot harder. And then you come back to Cape Town and you suddenly... super fit.
Absolutely, at sea level.
At sea level.
But if you think about driving your car up to Johannesburg, with all the love in the world, second gear does not feel the same in your car as it does in Cape Town.
In Cape Town.
Quite unbelievable. And I think it's the same thing.
With singing and with voices and with breathing.
Yeah.
Let's have another piece of music. What are you going to choose for us now, Louis?
Again, something not musical theatre. I've chosen a piece by Maurice Delage, a French composer. It's a French chamber song from a cycle of his called Four Hindu Poems. And this is the second one from the cycle. All of the songs are named after an Indian city where he was in 1911 when he composed them. So this one's called Lahore, obviously named after the city. It is sung by Anne-Sophie von Otter, who I just love. It's an interesting combination of instruments. There are two flutes, two clarinets, an oboe, harp, and string quartet. The poem is actually by Heinrich Heine. So it's not originally in French. It was translated from the German. And it's just so exquisite. It's about a fir tree that stands alone somewhere in the north, in a cold northern country, surrounded by ice and snow. And he dreams of a palm tree in the east. And this palm tree is standing, not weeping, but mourning, on a burning rock, on a hot rock. And I just love that idea of this tree dreaming of the other tree. It's about this longing and, you know, need for companionship. It was, as I said, it was written in 1911, which was actually the year in which T.S. Eliot was studying in Paris. So one would have hoped that maybe somewhere he would have met Maurice Delage.
Well, that's a thought.
Yeah, that's, you know, imagine the interesting conversation. And then interestingly, the year after, T.S. Eliot went back to America, to Harvard, to go study Indian philosophy and Sanskrit. So I thought that was a nice little connection
to cats. Absolutely. music by Delage, and that was called Lahore, named after an Indian town of yes. Lahore, and was the choice of my guest Louis Zunama here on People of Note this week. We're talking about Cats, and Louis is the musical director of this marvelous musical, Cats, which is about to open here at Artscape. And just briefly, I said to you while we were listening to that, Andrew Lloyd Webber is very specific, isn't he? So when you look at the music, when you look at the score, all his markings, articulations, bowings, whatever, you absolutely have to stick to.
Absolutely. You pretty much have to do what's on the page. What's on the page. I think it's a good way to quality control and to make sure that the product has a similar or the same standard all over the place, you know.
Does Andrew Lloyd Webber, for example, know each show around the world when and if it's happening? He will know about the show in Cape Town.
I believe so, absolutely. I think he would be very much involved.
Louis, there's so much I want to ask you, and just briefly about your touring, because as you've said a few times, you've mentioned Korea, the East a lot. You've done a lot in the East. How come the East? Why does Peter Turin do so much in the East?
It's actually almost more DWB that then takes these shows to the East. Usually we would cast the shows here and then they become a touring production, usually with Peter's associates or colleagues. I have a feeling it's because the cities are so enormous there. There's definitely expendable income in a place like China.
Yes.
You know, Paul Warren Griffin always says there's meat on the bone there. And so you would take it to any of the big cities and they're millions of people who live in those cities, and they absolutely love musical theatre. They love theatre. They love Western musical theatre very much. They like to see these blueprint products, the brand names especially. It's quite unbelievable.
And we use our actors, don't they, on the production here. The whole thing goes over.
Yes, so this specific production will travel internationally now for a good 2 years.
Wow.
And to various very, very interesting places.
Do you have a favorite? I mean, you've been around quite a lot. Do you have a favorite? Or maybe you don't want to say.
I do love working in places like Singapore. I do like Korea. I actually love China as well. I love cities like Shanghai. This is so much in terms of art and nightlife and wonderful food. And even, you know, 10 years ago, I didn't like working in Beijing at all. But now it's changed so much. China is such a different landscape. More people speak English. There's more independent coffee shops and independent wine bars. And it's a very, very interesting atmosphere.
A little birdie told me that when you do go to these places, you do a considerable amount of research.
I do.
and you say you enjoy it.
I do. And it generally involves the culinary world, I have to say. I do. I do love food travel and wine travel and stuff like that. I think it's a very good way to get under the skin of a place.
So when you know you're going to Beijing or Singapore, wherever, do you look up their restaurants and their finest wines and all the rest of it?
Absolutely.
But it sounds as though you're also interested in the culture side, because you mentioned galleries and things like that.
Yes, I'm a very, very big art lover. I was in London 2 weeks ago to go assist with some Matilda auditions, because there's another international tour of Matilda starting as well. We had a few days off, and I spent 3 days consecutively in the National Gallery just because I couldn't get enough. I couldn't get enough of just going back. And, of course, it's free.
This is an amazing thing.
It's just incredible. Yeah. It really is.
Just going back to Matilda, this is the Peter Turin production of Matilda that's still running all these years later.
It's well recast now, so I suppose it's moved on from the Peter Turin production. There's a few of the company members from that original Peter production that are traveling now with us, but generally it's been recast generally out of the UK now.
But Louis, that brings me to my next question. Do you get tired of the show? How do you keep going when you 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 6 months, a year into a show to keep yourself fresh?
I think a change of scenery makes a massive difference.
That's a good
because
point.
That's a very big thing. You take, even though it's the same show, you're not in the same city. You're taking to a different opera house, to a different theater, very different audience, very different city. So that really helps to keep it fresh. And this Cats tour, for example, now has lovely breaks in between the tours, because obviously the sets and everything have to be shipped. So that really helps. You're not busy nonstop for 2 years.
You'll go after this run in Cape Town. You'll go to Johannesburg, won't you, to Monte Cassino.
Yes.
Then break before you go overseas.
Yes. I can't even remember what the first stop is now. It's bound to be somewhere. Maybe it's India, since we've just listened to something set in India, basically.
But then you need to start doing your research on wherever you're going.
Absolutely, absolutely. Get out there, all the guides. Thank goodness for the internet also nowadays. People, write wonderful blogs and things. So there's so much research to do.
Do you also add to those blogs? Do you
not
write?
Not really. And people often say, why don't you? I don't know. I'd rather not.
Okay. But Louis, the whole point of a show like this, I suppose, is keeping fresh, even in a six-week run in Cape Town. And with the cast, as you say, having to be fit and all that. And when the audience sees it, you need to be as though you're at the opening night.
Absolutely.
On top form.
And that's hopefully what it's going to be like, eight shows a week every week.
Well, are there eight shows a week?
I believe there are eight shows a week. That's what I think. I mean, it's usually, I'm so used to just saying it's eight shows a week because that's what we normally do.
Yeah.
You know?
And you've got, I mean, with all these opera houses and things you say you've worked in, I think I can safely and proudly say that Artscape is right up there with the best, Artscape Opera House.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful venue. It really is. Every time I'm inside, I watched Chicago there recently when it was here. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it really is a wonderful venue. And even, and then I actually saw it twice. I saw it in the stores and then I watched it from the balcony as well. And I hadn't sat on the balcony for ages. And it was just wonderful. I have to say, Artscape has a very special place in my heart, the Opera House.
You know, well, it does for all of us. Yeah. Louis, what's your next piece of music?
It's a choral piece by John Rutter called There's a Flower, with a poem by John Audley, who was a 15th century poet. John Rutter, Cambridge Singers. It was written in 1985, which is interestingly the year in which Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote his Requiem. And a year later, in 1986, he would write Phantom. So by 1985, Katz was already 4 years old. 1981.
Wow, that's a thought. Out,
so.
Thank you.
That was music by John Rutter. Now I gather Sir John Rutter. And yes, another choice of my guest, Louis Zornhammer, who's the musical director of Cats, Peter Tureen's production, which will be opening here very shortly at Artscape, our magnificent Artscape. You know, at this point of interview, Louis, I just want to learn a bit about your background, because you spoke earlier about learning the organ when you were young. Mm. Did you always want to be a musician as far back as you can remember?
I actually wanted to be a pilot.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. And I, in fact, a few years ago did my student pilot's license, and then I never carried on with it. So, of course, you lose all those hours.
Yes.
My father was a crop sprayer. You know, those people who obviously flew with their undercarriage in the crops, basically.
Yes.
So maybe it's in my blood a little bit, but that was a very big thing. And those were the days when, of course, you know, there was conscription, etc. So I thought I was probably going to go to the Air Force and then, you know, go on from there. But then that went away. And then suddenly I thought, well, music. And interestingly, this last piece that we listened to was one of the first things that I heard in Dieffenbaumlande High School, where I went to school. It was one of the first things I heard that Dani Smith's chamber choir sang in 1990. And I just thought it was one of the most beautiful pieces of music I'd ever heard in my life.
And there you've put it in our program.
Yes.
Thank you. In fact,
Dani was my organ teacher. So I think I started doing well as a pianist, not so much an organ. I mean, I was fine with organ, but my piano all of a sudden started becoming much better when I was in matric. And that's when I then decided to go to UCT to go study with Albion.
When did you start playing the piano? Did you start, sounds like you started later than normal?
At the age of six.
That's the right sort of age.
Yeah.
Oh, so you studied with Albie van Schalkwyk?
Yes, I did, and for 2 years, and he left for Bloemfontein, and then I studied with Graham Fitch after that. And we were very lucky. We were always surrounded by these wonderful pianists. I mean, in my fourth year was when Francis du Toit and Franklin Leary and all of those places, or people came down to Cape Town. So there was always just a wonderful atmosphere of performing pianists at the University of Cape Town. We were very lucky, and we were still, oh my goodness.
Did you know where you wanted to go when you were playing the piano and then went to the organ? When did the musical come into your
life? It was completely by fluke. I was busy teaching in the UK to pay back a study loan, and then Stefan Lombard phoned me and said, we need a keyboard player for Phantom. And I was in such a miserable teaching position, honestly. It was like heaven sent. I was like, yes, get one to fly it home. And that's where it started. That was in 2003, I believe.
Okay.
And then one thing after the other, you know, becoming assistant musical director and then musical director for things for Peter Tureen. Thank God for Peter, I tell you, because that was, it was, and but I didn't realize how my life would change, what the direction it would take. I thought it was going to be classical music or opera, and it's still my first love, clearly, you know, as you can
judging
see
from your choices,
my choices.
But you specifically said opera, that you wanted to get into opera.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons that I went to UCT, because they had an opera school. They have an opera school.
But you don't mean as a singer, do you?
No, I wanted to become an opera conductor. I was obsessed with opera in my teens.
Oh,
absolutely obsessed. And again, a reason why Artscape held such a, because Tristan and Isolde was my first big opera of all things.
Wow, yes, that's quite a thing to
Günther Schneider Simson production,
yes,
with Marita,
yes,
Napier. Oh my goodness. Yeah, so really, really special.
And now the musical, is that going to be your life? I mean, I know you're still young-ish, but
thanks, Rodney. Yes. I suppose so. I love this world. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I love the people in it. I love the care that people take. I love the unbelievable care that people take with this material.
And also the response of the audience. The audiences love it. They love these big shows, don't they?
They really do. Like, I have to say, it really is quite interesting and like, how wonderful people are.
And you've won all sorts of bursaries as well to study all over the place.
But I'm about 30 years ago, Ron.
Is it long as that?
Literally.
I just wish I could read all these things. Hair, Chess, Grease, Cats, The History Boys, Evita, Matilda, Jesus Christ Superstar, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. You seem to have done everything and worked with so many people. No wonder you're – and travel and do the research. You're a happy chappy.
Very.
What's going to happen – oh, I was going to say what's going to happen after Cats, but you go to Johannesburg and then – overseas somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, there will be more traveling. Certainly.
Okay. Let's have another piece of music, okay. Louis.
I decided to stick with something where the poetry is a little bit more important, just because, you know, of T.S. Eliot and Cats and, you know, the importance of the T.S. Eliot poems. And I chose something by Schubert, a song by Schubert called Der Zwerg, which is a poem by Matthäus von Collen, who was a friend of Schubert's and also a tutor to Napoleon's child, one of Napoleon's children. And it's one of these wonderful Gothic ballads about a queen and a dwarf on the ocean, and then he murders her because she left him for the king. If anybody's listening to this, like, have a moment and go and Google the translation of Der Zwerg, the dwarf by Schubert. It's just one of the most wonderful ballads, a little bit operatic, a little bit theatrical, like a little tableau, really wonderful piece of music. And it's sung by Jesse Norman and Philip Moll. Couldn't wish for a better combination.
Music by Schubert, music about a dwarf. Indeed. And it was another choice of my guest, Louis Zurnheimer. We're talking about cats, basically. He's the music director there, but also about many other things in your life. And talking about Elliot, which you've done twice now, and Elliot's the main inspiration for the songs, the words of the songs in the show, isn't it?
Yes.
Or isn't he, I should say.
Yes, yeah. Because the poems are from the old Possum's Book of Practical Cats,
yes,
written in 1939. And it's, I think also Cats, the first time that Andrew Lloyd Webber used previously published material. Not all the text from Cats is from Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. Some of it was found by his widow after his death and given to Sir Trevor Nunn, little snippets of poems that she found in the house. I just found it absolutely charming. Mm. And from other things that he wrote, I think the one poem is called Rhapsody on a Windy Night, where a lot of the material, the text that explains Grisabella, the glamour cat, some of the text comes from there. And it's a little bit darker than Old Possum stuff.
Yes, you know?
it's not children's material.
But then Out the Blue at the end comes Memory, which is completely different,
yes,
really, from any other music.
Yeah.
It's a big hit of the show. Yeah. But yet it's so different from,
yes,
Macavity, the Mystery,
exactly,
Cat, and Deuteronomy.
Exactly. And then again, not children's stuff.
No,
really,
no.
Redemption, loss, and wanting to be redeemed. Such a beautiful story. I mean, it is essentially the story of Grisabella and being the one who's chosen to be reborn, you know.
Yes, gosh. And you mentioned earlier as well that you do a lot of your own research on all, and you found lots of links, didn't you, with all sorts of things and people and Elliot.
Yes, it was so interesting when after choosing this music to see just where these people fit in. You know, the next song, for example, is with a poem by James Agee, who I absolutely love as a poet. And if you think of a very similar era to this, I mean, that poem, for instance, this one that we will be hearing, was, I think, written in 1934, but set to music only in 1938 or 1938. And a year later was when T.S. Eliot wrote the Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. So a very similar era, just pre or start of World War II. Really, really interesting. And both American poets, of course.
Gosh, yes, there we go. Yeah. And just before we listen to that, do you, Louis, like cats?
As in the animal?
As a domestic pet.
I do, actually. I prefer dogs, but I grew up with cats. And my mom has a cute old cat. My mom's cat is 21 years old, which
good
is crazy.
Grief. I didn't know
so,
that
yes,
was possible.
Cats definitely feature in my life.
Okay, good. Now we're going to have to end. So we're going to end with this piece. What's it called?
It's called Sure on the Shining Night by Samuel Barber. And it is sung by Kyle Bielfeldt, a young American tenor. Absolutely exquisite. A poem by James Agee, who also wrote the words for Knoxville Summer of 1915.
Oh, yes.
Also by Samuel Barber.
Yeah, yeah.
And a tiny connection, interesting, a bit of a tenuous, like not real connection with Andrew Lloyd Webber, but James Agee was actually a film critic. And in the 1950s, he did a crit on Sunset Boulevard, the movie, which, of course, Andrew Lloyd Webber eventually wrote a musical about.
As a musical, too.
Yes.
Gosh, it is a link. It's fun. It sounds like you really love your job and you do lots of research as well, apart from the music that you're conducting. A reminder that Cats opens on the 10th of December here at Artscape. And I've been talking to the musical director of Cats, Louis Zurnheimer. Louis, thanks very much and have
Thank
a great
you,
run.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.